Welcome to The Science and Paranormal with Dr. Jana and Dr. Elliot, where science meets the unexpected, where we delve deep into the mysteries that straddle the line between scientific inquiry and paranormal. Get ready for a mind-altering journey as we embark on this phenomenal discovery together on United Public Radio Network 107.7 FM.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You are live with us as always, your favorite, fantastically favorite show, Science and Paranormal, with myself, Dr. Jana, and fabulous Dr. Elliot. Today, we have a fantastic woman on our show, Kim Moser. She is, in fact, the mistress of ceremonies.
She is.
On Dr. Elliot's symposium. Now, Dr. Elliot, would you present this fabulous guest that we have today?
I certainly will. And we're broadcasting live from the United Public Radio Network, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 and 107.7 FM from New Orleans, and also on Roku TV. Yes, Kim is an inspiring figure in the realm of paranormal research and folklore. I named her the 2024 Mistress of Ceremonies, following her involvement from the 2023 Halifax Paranormal Symposium. She was absolutely fantastic there, and all the guests loved her and wanted her back. So now she has an even bigger role where she has the time to share all of her experiences. She was drawn into the paranormal because of another Nova Scotian folklorist named Helen Creighton, who wrote a couple of the original Nova Scotia ghost books. She also holds a business management degree from Holland College, her small vessels operator proficiency from Nova Scotia Community College Nautical Institute. She was also been the host of not only her own podcast, Booze, but also on East Link's Haunted. And she ended up becoming a producer on that show. And it has run 13-14 seasons, Kim?
I think they're filming right now the 12th season, so it's been in the running for a long time. I was there from seasons 5 until 10, so 6 seasons total.
6 seasons total, going into season 12. That's absolutely unreal. And Kim is also known for visiting some of the most haunted places in America. She's been to the Waverly Hills Sanitarium, the Conjuring House, the Lizzie Borden House, which I'm jealous of. That sounded like a really cool experience, and maybe we'll get Kim to tell us a little bit about that tonight.
Yes.
The Witch House in Salem, and she is also embarking on a trip I'm sure she'll fill us in on later in the show, down in the States on some more haunted locations. So looking forward to Kim's adventures. Welcome to the show, Kim. Very, very excited to have you. Why don't you start with telling the audience how you became involved in the paranormal? I get asked that question all the time. It wasn't an incident that brought me into it, but for you, it might have been a little bit different. You've had a few different experiences throughout your life.
I have. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. And that is quite an introduction. Thanks. You made me sound a lot better than what I really am. Anyway, how did I get into the paranormal? Well, like you had mentioned, I've always been really fascinated by a lot of the folklore here in Nova Scotia on the east coast of Canada. And from, you know, really the time as soon as I could read, I was reading about spooky places like Oak Island. I was reading little short stories by Helen Creighton. And I was really fascinated by like anything that had to do with the region where I was living. So just really reading a lot of ghost stories fascinated me, although I was so afraid of the dark as a kid. I really don't think I got over that fear until recently, pretty recently anyway. But I had a few odd experiences during my childhood that I was convinced at that point that ghosts were real. But then I'm a very critical thinker and I like to, you know, maybe second guess it or get all scientific about it. But then I had this really profound dream about my grandmother, and she wasn't expected to pass. I knew that her health wasn't great. I knew that I was planning on going in to see her to kind of say my last goodbyes and stuff. My mom went in to see her probably about 2 or 3 days before she ended up passing. And she was like, "Kim, I don't know if you want to go in." She said, she's really not doing well. She doesn't know my voice. And my grandmother had gone blind from a stroke about 10 years prior to that. So she couldn't recognize her to see her. But it's funny, my grandmother, because she went blind, she lived with us for a while. And she was in a nursing home by the time she had passed. But when she was living with us, I was kind of starting to dabble with Ouija boards. And she didn't like it. And she used to blame me. Now, she was kind of getting dementia and stuff at the time, along with her stroke where she went blind. But she would blame me for moving the light switches. So she would get really frustrated because she was like, you know, she couldn't see. So she was, you know, feeling around for things and she wouldn't be able to find exactly where the light switch was, where she thought it should be. And so she accused me, because of playing with Ouija boards, that I had this special power and that I was moving light switches and doorknobs on her, which was terrible. Anyway, long story short, I had this dream about her, and my best friend and her boyfriend were staying with me that night, and I'd gone to bed. And when I woke up, my boyfriend at the time, when he walked into the bedroom, he had woken me up, and I was crying, and he was like, you know, "What's your problem? What's wrong?" And I said, "I had a dream about my Mimi and she had passed away." And he said, "No, it was just a bad dream. Go back to sleep." And I was like, "No, there's something so different about this. Like, I could smell her and I could see her and she hugged me and it was this all white background." And there are all these, sorry about the cattail. There are all these people around and they were just having these little conversations with one another like you would at a party. And I was there with her and she said, "I'm going now, dear." And I was like, "Okay, bye, Mimi. Love you." Gave her a hug, said her goodbyes. And when I woke up, I knew she was gone. And it was about 2:15, between 2:15 and 2:30 in the morning. And so my mother called around 7 a.m. and she said, "I wanted to let you know that your grandmother passed away last night." And I was like, "Mom, I already know." And of course, we were upset and crying and all that kind of stuff. And she confirmed the time of her death. She heard.
Can you still hear it?
No. Looks like we just lost you. Oh, you went on mute all of a sudden. Maybe a cat.
Oh.
Punch the button.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Back. We're good.
So it was such a coincidence because my mother had confirmed that she had passed, you know, sometime between 2 and 2:15 a.m. that there was something more to this, that it was really strikingly coincidental. And so from that moment on, I started to pay a little bit more attention to my dreams. And it turns out I can't turn it on or off. It just sort of happens. But I have had dreams about people who have passed, messages for their loved ones, with details that I really shouldn't know, details that I would not know about this person. So I find it really intriguing. And that was really what got me into like researching and being a little bit more comfortable with the idea of death, and also, you know, really wanting to learn more and go out and do investigations too. I've always loved watching ghost shows. So it kind of feels like a dream come true because I've always loved all this stuff. And now my life is just so rich with it. It's great.
That's awesome. Yeah. And certainly Sam, experience you had with your grandmother was a dream visitation, which is a type of apparitional appearance that can occur shortly after somebody has passed away. Usually pass along a message, like you said, she was almost saying goodbye to you, and you felt, you know, that you already knew she was gone. and I assume a little bit more at peace because you kind of already knew that this was coming when it did come. So very, very cool experience. I could see how that, you know, definitely piqued your interest to start researching this stuff. Now,
What's good about this dream is that it gives me hope. You know, somehow I have this dread of death and anything that is associated with death, although I probably saw it more than the regular person would, the ordinary person would. And still, nevertheless, I cannot come to terms with it. But your grandma said that there is a party and I'm going. Mm-hmm. Bye. So hopefully for us, it is going to be the same. Even if we won't have our grandchildren who will be able to see that, hopefully it's going to be like a party, but we'll say, okay, bye, going to a party.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was a great dream.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an awesome dream visitation for sure. You know, I think that's one of the coolest ones I've heard of.
I will say too, what's really interesting, cause you're kind of talking about parties and stuff. She was wearing her favorite outfit. Like I remember seeing her in like her favorite wool skirt and like the color, and like I could see the detail. I could see everything in this dream. It was incredible.
That's wild. That's really
cool. So she was getting ready. She prepared for that.
Oh yeah. She was already looking her best, and she's like, I'm going now, dear. Okay. Love you. Bye.
You said that she had dementia at the time, right?
She did. Yeah.
But interestingly enough, that she did get prepared. And if you saw that dream, it was kind of you were speaking to her soul. So mm-hmm. at that time, there's no dementia at the time. You know, people somehow, they get really conscious of their experiences and where they are at the moment. And so she got ready and you saw her and you spoke to her soul.
Well, the other thing that I've heard happens as well is if somebody has a, you know, a disability, say they lost use of their legs or whatnot, they've reported that when they're over into the spirit, obviously these are during near-death experiences because they had to come back to tell their story, but when they're having their near-death experience, that they don't have that disability anymore, that they're able to walk and things like that. So it's those are really, really fascinating human experiences that we get to listen to and study.
Yeah, because really it's like they're not bound by their body anymore. There's no restriction.
Exactly.
It's just they can be who they've always wanted to be, right?
Exactly. Exactly. They're not limited by the physical body anymore. It's really, really cool. Now, when you were on Haunted, you guys obviously the premise of the show is to do haunted, you know, paranormal investigations. Did you do any sort of investigating before you got on Haunted, or was Haunted how you got involved in the investigation aspect?
I did a little bit when I was doing Booze and Bourbon with my co-host Jen. And we had actually gone to, at that point when we were doing the podcast, we had gone to like Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Where else did we go? We went to Buffalo Trace Distillery, which is haunted as well. So we sort of had guided ghost hunts and we were very familiar with the equipment. We had purchased a couple of pieces of equipment at that time. So it wasn't quite as professional or as in-depth as what I got into when I was doing haunted, but we definitely, we got our feet wet.
Hmm. That's really great. And then you still to this day are doing investigations. Mm-hmm. And you have some coming up or some sites that you're going to go check out here in the very near future. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So at least 6 months, I have been doing some paranormal investigations with two of my best friends, Lamar and Chelsea. His YouTube channel is Lamar Mends. And we went to the States back in November. We hit up some really great locations, you know, former asylums. And we had so much fun and we realized that there was such a good connection and that, you know, unfortunately, there aren't as many locations like that in Canada that we can just go and rent out and visit, and locations too that have like so much trauma stuck with them and that are well-known haunted locations. So we decided we were going to go back to the States. So we're starting out in Indiana and we're going to Indiana State, and we're also going to a haunted village called Billy Creek And so the folks from Project Fear, which used to be Destination Fear, they've gone to those two locations. So I've kind of seen their investigation. So I'm really interested to see what happens to us when we go. And then we're going to go to Kentucky. We're going to a distillery that's rooted in a lot of bourbon history and was abandoned for 50 years. And the owner just started to revamp it and do renovations. And the day that he got the property, so the day that the older man who owned it signed over the deed, he passed away. So we think that's pretty interesting. We want to see if maybe we can contact him if he's still lingering. And then we're headed to Tennessee, and we are going to a place called the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. We're going to do some other daytime stuff too. We're going to go through the Smoky Mountains and do a little hiking and see what other kind of haunted or spooky places we can find.
Now we're talking to see very some cool beauty as well.
Yeah, definitely.
To love it. Yeah. What's interesting about your experience and how everything is started is that a lot of people don't pay attention to their dreams. Yes, they may see seeing their loved one passing away and actually having a confirmation of that ahead of time, and they will just leave it as that, and not even do anything about it, you know. But you started seeing more and more of that. You got interested, and if we speak about following our destiny and what we were predestined to do, which I don't like this concept at all, but this is the concept nevertheless, because I want to be able to decide everything for myself and be the king or queen of my own life. Well, I want to be the king, right? I want to be king. So that tells me that you were following, that you had that inner knowing of your destiny, perhaps. Did you feel that this is the course of action that you should be taking? Or did you have any doubts at the beginning?
Yeah, I still think I have doubts every now and then. But I've mentioned this once before that I was afraid to kind of talk about it. It's like this taboo topic. And I was so used to living in a corporate world, you know, sitting across an office desk from the CEO of a company, and we're securing some really expensive deals. And like, the paranormal was the last thing I was about to start talking about. So once I decided, you know, I really want to do a podcast, what are me and my friend Jen so passionate about? We always talk about ghost stories. It seemed like the right thing for us to do. And then I found myself, when we started to have the episodes come out, I was almost afraid to post it on social media because I was afraid of what others were going to say. So I think for a long time, I never imagined that this would quite be the path. But I think like you said, there's just something about it always being a knowing and me being comfortable about the idea of there being something beyond this life. And yeah, I've always been interested in it. So now I'm not overly surprised that I'm here, but if you would have asked me, you know, 5 years ago, I would have been like, no, never. I'm too afraid to talk about it. I'm too worried about what other people are going to say.
That's so interesting that you're saying that. And I ask everybody this question because it always, is a question of interest to me, because it took me 20 years to sort of come out of the closet with this ideas, in fact, and not being afraid what people are going to think of me. Not that I was overly concerned with the people's opinion of me before, but then when you're professional and when you're a therapist, and all of a sudden you come out and you say, you know what, this is also what I do, because I've done it, this work 50-50. And yeah, when I started openly talking about it, I was concerned that not that many people would understand and I may lose some clients of mine. And nevertheless, that did not happen. But I couldn't stay behind the closed doors of the closet, sitting in the closet, for Pete's sake, because there are consequences. If we don't do what we are here to do, there are consequences. There are going to be some negative consequences in our personal lives and professional lives. And finally, we will be taken on a route to do what we need to do. So you being interested in that, I'm actually proud of you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm proud of you too.
I'm proud of you more than myself, because it took me 20 years, you know, of doing work behind the bars, so to say, not those bars that you thought, Dr. Elliot.
not the kind that he's used bars. To.
No. No. Right. But I'm really proud of you. So it is important to do what we are set for, the interests that we have. And those interests, sometimes they come in our childhood.
Right. There you
go. That's where we set off. And of course, for me, those experiences, they started early on, and the dreams and the premonitions. And I knew who's going to die when. And that really scared my parents, and they said, don't say anything. You know, that's schizophrenic behavior, even if that was a objective reality that people would die after I said that they would and when they would. But nevertheless, then growing up, I realized that, I was told that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But nevertheless, it took me 20 years. I said, no, I'm a modern person. Who does that in the modern world, for Pete's sake? And I said, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. So it took me 20 years.
Wow.
So, good for you and for you, Dr. Elliot.
It's interesting because, you know, you guys hit a very valid point. There is still, you know, a bit of stigma, I think, attached to the paranormal. I think I see it, although it's very professionally done today, it's not like before where they would, you know, just kind of talk down to you and criticize you or make fun of you. But even us seeking sponsors for the symposium, you know, there's some companies mm-hmm. that just write back, and you can tell by the way that they're writing back, they're not sure about the topic. So they'll say stuff like, yeah, we just don't think your symposium is a good fit for our business and things like that. So I know it's like their polite way of saying like, oh, I don't know if I want to get involved in that. And then I kind of faced, a similar kind of circumstances as you fine ladies did as well with the RCMP, because I was very open about what I did. Before I joined the RCMP, there was newspaper articles published about me. And then I joined the RCMP, and I was, you know, still somewhat open about it until I started to face some ridicule from coworkers. And that's one of the kind of connections I have with my fiction hero Fox Mulder, is we both suffered the wrath of our colleagues in law enforcement, so I kind of kept it quiet, like you guys said, for a professional reason, you know, because I am working with ranks, and it's a paramilitary organization, so there's a certain mindset that they have for you. And then, of course, you're going to court as an expert. So you don't want that kind of stuff being brought up on the stand. And, you know, if or the Crown allows it for you to have to try and answer questions about a field that there's still lots of answers that we don't know yet. So, you know, there were certainly some professional reasons. But then when I knew I was getting close to retiring, I didn't care. I knew I only had like a couple of years left. So I started to come out and do podcasts again and do the more public kind of profile thing. But
Dr. Elliot came out of the closet.
I came out of the closet. You're right. I it was a couple of years before I retired. I came out of the closet. So.
Yeah.
It's true. And that's part of what we promote at the Halifax Paranormal Symposium, because when we do some public events around here, that's one comment I see on the surveys that we send out, is that there's a lot of people that are thankful that there was a venue with some like-minded individuals that they felt safe to share their experiences with. And so that's one of the things that I like about the Paranormal Symposium, is that, you know, we welcome people from all faith and all different backgrounds. You know, like last year, there were some Wiccan individuals there. There was Catholics there. You know, there was atheists there. There was a whole mix, and it went really well. And that was one of the comments, is people enjoyed looking around the room and saying like, oh, there's other people interested in this really strange topic, and I feel safe in there, and I felt safe to share my experiences. So I think that's important that we get that message out too in the type of work that we do.
And that is why we're not alone. And there are so many people who feel and think the same way, that I'm afraid, I don't want to do that, what people are going to think of me. So they're all of us. All of us have been there. So.
Absolutely.
Could you talk some about your court cases? I am so intrigued. So are you called to testify in some cases?
No.
So what cases are we talking about?
No, sorry. I meant my cases.
Your cases. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we have a person to testify in court.
Yeah. No. No, because you got on the stand, defense can, if they want to bring up your credibility, which normally they don't, because once they bring up credibility, then it opens it up for the Crown to go after their client's credibility. And let's face it, most people that are in court, or you usually have something that they don't want out there. That's why they're there in the first place. So, I didn't want to go to court and have to explain that, I was part of a nonprofit organization and that investigates the supernatural and all that stuff, because you are there, as an expert investigator, witness. So, that was one of my reasons as well for kind of keeping things quiet while I was working with the RCMP, and then just kind of researching things on the side and taking courses. And speaking of courses, actually, I wanted to ask Kim, that's a great lead way into, you're taking a course right now, actually, on mediumship.
I am.
Said, when I talked to you, you said it was going really well. Tell us how Laura Warren is. Who's the instructor on there, and she's going to be one of the guest speakers for the 2024 symposium.
Yeah, no, it's so nice to actually, see her face to face and have conversations with her, because through you, Elliot, and also one of my coworkers, my director of photography, Mark Hammond, I do some other shows that aren't paranormal. And so when I'm directing, Mark and I are very close, and, he kept telling me, I was filming this one series called Sightseers, and my friend Laura, he's like, she was on the show, and he's like, you have to meet her sometime because the two of you are just going to click. And so then when we started getting connected because of the symposium, I saw that she was doing this mediumship course, and I was like, I absolutely need to be a part of this, because I feel like, I've always known that I have a very strong intuition and I've had these dreams, but I don't necessarily know how to open myself up and if I have other gifts and all of that kind of stuff. So it's been really amazing, because every class she takes you through this meditation, and you really have to, think about all your senses. You have to think about smelling things and walking on grounds and feeling what it feels like under your feet and opening up your chakras. And once I started to do that, like every week, and I started to think about it, and I started to be actually like kind of quieting my mind when I think I'm getting a message, it's been incredible. I've been journaling almost every day. There's little coincidences that happen every day. My dreams have become really strange, so I write them down. It's been a really great experience. What I've learned from her is that everybody has these gifts. It's just how you tune into everything.
I believe that, yeah. And like you said, I think there's certain people more attuned into it already than somebody like me, for example. No, that's really cool. So do you think on your new trip that you're doing, you're going to be able to bring some of what you learned there to some of these sites?
Absolutely. And I'm really excited, because part of this course, I get a one-on-one private session with her, and that's going to happen 2 days before I leave. So I'm really excited, because I'm going to get to talk to somebody who knows what I do. She was an investigator on a television series, and really being able to like apply the knowledge that I've gotten so far into that field specifically of paranormal investigation.
Now, in that mediumship course, do they teach you how to protect yourself? I know that you spoke on opening chakras and opening yourself in order to be available and feel and hear the information. But do they talk about how to protect yourself? Because not every energy is benevolent out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know that from my own perspective. I've always been really conscious of protecting myself. But in this course specifically, it's more about love and light and connecting with loved ones. And so I think Laura's perspective, and it may change depending on the type of work that these people want to do, but I think her perspective is very much like there is no evil. So I think that right now, that's the only thing that I don't disagree with. I'm always open. I'm always all ears, but I've definitely had instances where things have not been love and light. So I know myself to protect. So it'll be, like I said, it'll be interesting to see what we can dial in on before I go and before I'm like, you know, let's talk about how we can do this out in the field kind of thing.
Yes, yes, that is so important. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that in your practice, you felt and you knew that those energies, some of the energies were not benevolent and outwardly malevolent, right? Mm-hmm. And you know that you're supposed to be protecting yourself. And I would just stress it, emphasize it on the importance of protecting ourselves. That, for example, perhaps, what's your name? Laura Warren. Perhaps she never encountered an evil spirit that was not filled with love, right?
But she is like the most pure, beautiful, like healing aura and energy that if she did encounter something that might be evil, it would like bounce right off of her.
That is good. Of course, there's no force that could destroy that kind of a power of love, right? But at the same time, not all of us are like that. And not all of us are protected by that love and the higher vibrations, right? So it is important to listen to yourself, like you said. Yeah, but in my practice, not because you are not filled with love and light, you still are, because you are a beautiful, friendly person with a soul full of light. And nevertheless, it does not depend on you, the existence of the evil and malevolent energies in the world. So, and you came in contact with that. So it is very important to protect ourselves. I think that you are going to find a lot. This is my understanding now. This is what came to me. You are going to find out a lot through this mediumship course, and you will take sort of the torch and you will go with that. You will find out more. You will bring more into mediumship and you will get more discoveries that you will be talking about it. I see that. You're going to come back several years later and on the show, you're going to say, Yana, you were right. This is what's going to happen.
I don't doubt that you are right. Yeah, you that's exciting.
Not because I am right, but you will be, I can see that, you will be that person who will be on the forefront of discoveries in that field.
Thank you. That's very exciting. Yeah. I hope you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's really cool. I think that's great that you're doing developing an intuition course once, just to kind of, because I felt like I just don't have that ability, but I also had the problem before where I wasn't really listening to my intuition. And I found every time I didn't listen to it, I usually paid the price, or I made the wrong decision, or could have made a better decision. And so I started listening to it. So I totally think courses like that are really important. Yes. For you to open up. And like you said, just pay more attention to the signals and the information that your body is receiving. I think it's really important.
Yeah, it's really funny too. I find that the a lot of the messages come through when I'm just kind of getting ready in the morning and I'm looking in my mirror and I'm not thinking about anything. I'm just like putting my makeup on or doing my hair. And it's like my own voice in my head. It's like, I have something to tell you. And so sometimes I'll just think it really loud in my head and be like, okay, what's the message? Or I will say it out loud. And then it's been really hard to practice, but I have been practicing this, is not allowing any thoughts or any words pop into my head because of my own thoughts. I'm just like, okay, quiet mind, quiet mind, quiet mind. What's the word? And then the word will pop into my head and I'll be like, okay, noted. And then later on in the day, I'll be like, oh, I know why that word popped in my head. That makes perfect sense now.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you're doing that. It's important to listen to ourselves, because it was kind of funny for me. It was always funny. I try to find the funny note in anything that I do. I noticed some long time ago that I would be getting ready, for example, to go to, that was a long time ago, to get together with friends, some party, having a good time. And all of a sudden I would get this thought, all right, like, you have to stay home because there's information that needs to be told and written down. Like, for Pete's sake, you know, I was gonna just go and have such a good time, and now I have to stay home. And I know if I don't, the information will still come and I won't be able to record it or hear it properly. So I stay and I listen to it, and I go to my office and I take my book and I'm right in it, you know. So we have to be able to listen to ourselves, and that is very important.
Yeah,
absolutely. I love that. Yeah, that's awesome. We've talked a little bit about paranormal shows there, Kim. You were on one. Laura Warren was on one. I've done small cameos, I'll call them, on some as well. How do you find the television shows have affected, you know, the paranormal community? Do you think they're positive? Do you think they're negative? Do you think it's a bit of both? What's your experience on that? How do you think it's affected the paranormal community?
That's a really good question. I feel like there are certain shows out there that are what I call overproduced. So, you know, you've got the producers and the director in the background already kind of knowing the storyline that they want out of this whole ghost story or location. So they'll do anything they can to achieve that. And I think that has implanted doubt in people's mind, as in the viewer's mind. And I think there's a lot of people who tune into those shows that are skeptical. You know, it might be just a couple at home on a Friday night and the guy wants to watch a paranormal show and the wife or other partner does not. And they're like, no, this isn't my thing. I don't believe in it. So I think there's a lot of people who are viewers like to discredit things, or they look at a piece of paranormal equipment and they're like, you know, it's just doing that because, you know, somebody's got a cell phone on in the room. So I think, you know, there are definitely some credible shows out there, but there's the occasional one. And a huge, huge, huge one that's out there that has implanted doubt in people's minds. Now, I also think the state of the world right now, and anybody who's like a sensitive or an empath has certainly felt the world shift, I think, especially since like the new year. A lot of people that I've talked to have just been like, you know what, I'm really depressed, or I'm really off. Something just doesn't feel right. I feel disappointed. And I don't know if COVID was the start of all that for a lot of people, but I think, you know, with the turmoils and the wars and all of this going on, that some people feel like this isn't the world they signed up for. And I think that that has instilled this, like, this feeling in people where it takes a lot for them to get scared. So I think that's kind of where this trend of demons and really dark, lower vibrational entities have kind of taken over, because people aren't really scared of like your average ghost show anymore. That makes sense.
How interesting. I did not even think about it.
Well, yeah. The answer was not what I was expecting. I don't know. I was expecting, something else. But I thought that was a very powerful message that you provided, because it does hit on a few things that could possibly be happening. Like you said, I was actually surprised once at an event. I asked people, we did a public ghost hunt for Esterfest. And I had asked people at the end of it, I said, how many people thought that tonight was going to be like on television? People there. And I think only one person raised their hand, and the rest, you know, said basically that they don't believe in the paranormal shows and they know it's all done for dramatics. And I was actually very surprised, because in the paranormal investigator world, you often have this belief that people think what they see on TV is real, and then that's how they're going out and doing things. And there are some people that will say that I learned everything I know off the Travel Channel or, you know, whatever. But for the most part, yeah, I think people more skeptical. And I totally hear what you're saying as well about the current, it does seem, again, I'm not a medium or anything like that, but it does seem like this year is like a very depressing year. Like the weather hasn't been that great. Our politics up here in Canada is not that great. I'm sure in America people would think probably the same. Although ours is really, really bad. and there's just like the cost of living, and like people don't have money, and half my friends are working 2-3 jobs now. So there's definitely, you know, a big shift coming along. And like you said, they almost have to top it now on TV, because our lives are so miserable right now. How do you top that? And how do you, like, you know, bring out more fear in people? And we have seen that trend of the shows going down the demon road, and they need a scare every 3 minutes and things like that. So it's almost, sometimes life is way stranger than fiction. And I think we're kind
so
of
so true
in that period this year where our lives are crazy as it is, so we don't need to watch a ghost show.
Yeah.
It is a ghost show by itself.
Yeah, no, that's, I thought that was a really, really, you know, interesting interesting answer.
I thought about it a lot.
No, I thought that was really great. I wasn't expecting that. Now with the next question, how do you find TV portrays the investigations compared to doing it, you know, properly and with using the scientific method and doing like a proper parapsychological investigation?
Yeah, it's quite a contrast. I think I was honestly, I was pretty surprised too the first time I landed on a set at a location and we were doing an investigation, because there's nothing that I've ever participated in that has been recreated. And with that being said, there's a lot of like, you know, behind the scenes stuff, like what people don't see in order to get evidence and get all the best views and everything, is the entire film crew setting up like night vision cameras, setting up all these different camera angles, you know, figuring out which rooms they're going to do the first night, which rooms they're going to do the second night, if they need to take what they call B-roll, so interior and exterior shots. And as an investigator, sometimes you're sitting there waiting for the cameras to roll on you, and you're like so antsy and you're so excited just to kind of get everything going. Or if you're a medium that's on the show and you're already getting messages, it's like so frustrating because you just want to blurt out all this information, but you can't. You have to sit there and you have to wait. So that was really eye-opening for me. And then also, you know, just trying to figure out like which people are going to investigate together. And, you know, you're talking to the film crew and you're like, okay, which camera angles are going to work here? And, you know, they may make a suggestion. Hey, so-and-so downstairs, I don't know if you heard this conversation, but they were talking about a Hillary. So maybe, you know, if you find the name Hillary, that will be interesting for us. There's quite a difference between just going with your friends or going for research purposes and logging everything. Sometimes, you know, the ugly side of it too is if you're part of the crew that has to listen to all of the audio and all of the, you know, EVP recordings, that can take like 12 hours or more. And that's the stuff that the viewer doesn't see. So there's kind of like the not so pretty and polished behind the scenes things that you have to do to either get really great evidence or have a really great show.
And besides, that could be really boring, right? From their point of view.
Yeah, exactly. Who's going to want to watch that?
Well, yeah.
Exactly.
And that's
the sensation.
And that's what a lot of people understand is they realize, like Kim said, for example, you could have two tape recorders because we use two. Because for some reason, electronic voice phenomena, if it happens, it'll only show up on one of the devices, not both of the devices. So we'll use two. So then, like you said, if you're there for 12 hours, that's now 24 hours of recording.
Yeah.
And then your person now has to listen to 24 hours of recording, possibly stop it, rewind it, listen again to make sure it's not audio pareidolia or, you know, one of the investigators' voices. Because as much as you try and, you know, be quiet.
Or the sleeve of someone's jacket.
Yes, something like that. Again, cause, you know, audio pareidolia. Or like you said, you're working, especially on the television show, there's a ton of people there. There's a lighting person, you know, a director, a producer, there's staff. Might be the person, you know, that schedules, you know, the lunches and all that stuff. So you have multiple people on site. And as much as you're trying to keep everybody quiet, you might have unintentionally captured one of their voices on the recording as well. So hours and hours of work, but they don't show that part. Like you said, it's not, you know, it's not attractive to watch that, you know, for hours and hours. So very, very fascinating.
Yeah. And again, you can mention that the people are looking for something that is scary, right? A sensation. They're after sensation and that they're not so easily scared. However, when the Hollywood versions of this scary stuff come up and people look at that and they believe, especially when it says that based on true events, right? And when they see something like that, and of course it's embellished. Oh, we know it is embellished because what's important in my understanding is that everyday, day-to-day activities and what happens actually behind the scenes is much more interesting and much more pertinent to the lives of the people. Those are the actual cases, because sometimes when people ask me questions or what was the most fantastic and phantasmagoric event or case that you had, and they're looking for that sensation, they're looking for that spookiness, for shivers down their spine, and I don't I don't provide it to them. Because what's important is that those are not the cases that will be interesting to you, to those people. What I mean that, because if they really were on the set and really experienced that, they would die on the spot of a heart attack. Seriously, because people are hoping to see something interesting, but when they do, this is going to be the end of their lives.
Right.
Quite possibly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on how strong the ticker is, you're right.
What if we enact it? Okay. Let's just enact it.
You mentioned something interesting as well. You said, you know, people love that based on a true story. And I'm the type of guy that, like, when I like, that does attract me because I'm like, oh, cool.
Oh, I know that. I need to work on my spooky stories.
So I'll watch it, but then I like to research it afterwards and like see how close to the story it was. There was one movie Sarah and I watched one time. It was about like missing girls and we ended up looking it up afterwards. And the only thing that was true, because it said it was based on true events. It didn't say like based on a true story. And the only thing I could find that was true in it was that women go missing. That was it. And they threw that title on there. Yeah, saying based on true events. Like the whole thing, you couldn't find anything else about it except the fact that, you know, multiple women go missing per year. I was just like, oh my God.
We have to be really critical.
But it lured me in. It's good marketing.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie The Rite with Anthony Hopkins?
Yes. Now, from talking to actual exorcists, they said that one was done very well, actually.
Oh, so did you speak to Father Gary?
I didn't speak to Father Gary. Oh. No, I spoke to a couple of different exorcists. One was Archbishop Plato Angelicus. Another one was from down in the States. And he said that they did a really, really good job on
Yeah, they did, but not necessarily all of the events were true events. And he was
they're going to spice something up.
They had to, because they had to bring the sensation. They have to put on the big screens for people to get scared. They need to bring it, right? Because his father was not a mortician. And that was really spooky when you look at his father and he's really embalming the body. And for the small child, it would be the shock forever. And psychological problems in adulthood.
It's interesting though. Like I always tell this when I'm doing the lecture on hauntings, apparitions, poltergeists, and demons. But in the scene from The Exorcism of Emily Rose, where she's eating the spiders and licking her own urine up off the floor, that actually wasn't dramatized. That actually really did happen in that real case. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, like I said, the truth is. And it would be really cool to see a really talented movie producer and, you know, obviously director of arts and all the different titles that come with the movie, but to take a story and film it so that it still is scary, but it's only based on like the true events, and it's all in how you do the cinematography and the lighting and things like that. I think that would be really cool to see, you know, how close they could get it to becoming a very sensational movie, but without over dramatizing the actual facts. I think that would be. That would be a challenge. That's a challenge that I'm putting out there too.
Dr. Elliot. Yeah, it's all about money. It's all about money. Of course, an ideal of world that probably would have happened. And like you said, we get $500,000, right? And we would make the documentary.
Maybe that's right. We can do that. Right. Yeah. So anyone out there wanting to make a paranormal documentary, Dr. Yana and I are interested in that.
That would be true to the events. Seriously, guys.
Speaking of
come and sponsor us.
We're a little bit over the top of the hour, but this is Science and the Paranormal, broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans and Roku TV. Tonight, our special guest is Kim Mosher from Nova Scotia. She is an awesome paranormal investigator, and she's our mistress of ceremonies for the 2024 Halifax Paranormal Symposium.
And just a beautiful woman.
Oh, in addition to everything
else, yeah, we should not forget.
Can I talk to you guys every day?
Come on over. Yes, come on over. Once a week, what are you talking about? We don't provide us free compliments every single day. On Tuesdays only. On Tuesdays.
Okay.
Come on Tuesday.
I'll take it.
Now,
Kim, what do you think was probably your most challenging or... you had a case where it was kind of you walked away and you couldn't explain it through science that you still think about today?
Yeah, there's a few. There's definitely a few that it's like one of those things that you can't just really shake from your mind, and it just continuously makes you question things. I think the first time that I was really kind of like had my socks knocked off was when I was in an investigation and I was slapped like from behind, mm-hmm. and you could hear the sounds, and I like lunged forward. And then shortly after that, I was feeling like cobwebs and stuff all around my hair. And in the video, you can see like the bottom part of my curl kind of lifting up towards the ceiling. And I had like a full on meltdown. I was screaming, nearly crying. I couldn't contain myself. And then we went back and we looked at the footage again and we were like, oh, Kim, you're wearing a leather jacket. It sounds like two hands hitting you on the back of the jacket. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. So that messed with me a little bit for a while. It was one of those things that I couldn't stop thinking about. And then I had a pretty crazy experience. More recently, it happened in November. It didn't happen to me personally, but I was in the room while it happened to my friend Chelsea. She, you know, was holding a camera and we were in this room. And I don't want to say like we were antagonizing anything. We certainly weren't, but we could feel that there was like just kind of a really heavy, intense, almost angry energy kind of happening. So I had kind of made this suggestion, like, okay, let's get out of this room. And when we get out of the room, Chelsea's talking about how her back is burning. So I'm like, okay, well, let's look at your back. And so we looked at her back, and there was a massive scratch all the way up her back. And like, I saw where her hands were the whole time. And I thought, okay, like, I don't think that's friendly and that's normal. So, you know, I go down this rabbit hole of like, what was that? And then I find out that there's so many other people that have gone to that location that have a very similar scratch mark somewhere on their body, whether they wake up with it or they get it during an investigation. It's a very common thing. So, you know, sometimes my little critical slash skeptical mind is like, ah, ghosts don't exist. And then something like that happens. And I'm like, well, that's not even a ghost. Like, what is that? So yeah, there's been a couple of things that really stick out for sure. I'm going to see if I can find the photo for you and just flash it here on the screen so you guys can see it too.
Now those two places, what was kind of the history of them? Were they negative kind of hauntings that were
not that I'm aware of? They were just, you know, little haunted houses with no great crazy history. The first one is actually an inn, and it's in the valley. And then the second one is also an inn. It's a bed and breakfast. It's been featured on Kindred Spirits and a couple of other shows, and it's called Greystone Manor. It turns out there may be a lot of unmarked graves on the property, and they also think that the property used to be a speakeasy and there was like horse racing. So who knows, after a big night of drinking, who knows what could have happened. Here's the photo of the scratch.
Oh yeah. You can see that pretty clearly.
Then just to give you like a point of reference, like that's how big it was on her back.
Wow.
So it's quite large.
Wow.
And it looks really like raised.
It's almost like a bit of a horseshoe kind of look to it.
Almost. It's like a hook. And we think that it started from the bottom and ended over here. Interesting. Yeah.
But the interesting thing about it, like you mentioned the hook. Once I also had an experience similar to that. And it was a long time ago. And I was 17 at the time. And that experience was really scary to me. I saw a crazy big yellowish, grayish hand with long nails, dirty, slapping me right in my face on my left cheek. And I got so petrified. Who would have done it? And I'm in the room alone. And I went to look at myself in the mirror and I could see this four fingers. And at that time, I was 17, I was living with my parents, and I came and I showed them. They were so perplexed. And then I told them what happened, because they asked me a question, said, what did anything happen just recently that would bring that on? And because they believed me every time that I would speak up of this kind of occurrences. So what happened is that probably a couple of weeks prior to this happening, taking place, I had one person actually offering for the third time to teach me black magic, to teach me all these dark sciences. And that was the third time I said no. And that was, I'm sure, his way of just like either punishing me or just showing me. And I said no, because I did not choose that path. I could have chosen either path. And of course, I chose the path of a light.
Yeah.
And with this kind of abilities, you might as well turn dark. And even now, people who are of the light, they can also use their powers for the negative circumstances, of course, but that they choose light, of course. That's why we have to be very careful with those people who possess all these abilities, because if you drive them nuts, and so many people try to do that, you know, it is so interesting to me that people, a lot of them, they don't understand that trying to be negative and trying to push and push and push, break all of the boundaries and limits, they don't understand that even if you do that with just a regular person who doesn't have any understanding of the energy and how to direct the energy, right? That person can get angry, right? And especially with people with abilities like yours, Kim, right? Yours, Dr. Elliott, right? With the ESP, we are able to direct our energy. And don't they think that we are able to turn it the other way? And that would be the negative way. We just choose to live in the light. So this is very interesting. And of course, I avoided that kind of apprenticeship. I avoided
that. That's a good term for it. Yeah,
that's really interesting. And like, now that you say that, I'm just thinking about that trip that we went on in November. There was kind of a darker moment that potentially happened for Chelsea. And for a while, she was feeling like she was blocked and she couldn't necessarily receive messages or communicate with her spirit guides. And I wonder if something happened at the location that we were at prior to going to that Greystone Manor. Now you've really got me thinking.
That's interesting. Yeah, it happened to me before. And now since you mentioned that, happened to me before. And it was for me 2 months of not being able to hear anything. Not that my intuition was haywired. I wasn't able to use it at all. And why it happened, I was able to rewind back and I understood why I said it. So at the time I was speaking with a friend of mine and we were talking about how the evil spirits can deceive you, right? And at that time, I don't know what gotten into me and I got so either pride or something and I was just laughing. Sometimes I have to keep that humor just to myself. And I said, they're going to have to work much harder in order to deceive me. And oh my God, people, that was 2 months. I did not know the difference between light and darkness. I knew nothing. It was so bad. They showed me because usually with this gift, you can see between the spirits, you know, where darkness, where is light, you know, when people are lying to you. And it's easier to live this way. However, I did not know. I could not distinguish anything, couldn't hear anything. It was really bad up until I had to go to a group of people who prayed for me. And they were non-denominational and they were able to get it out. And those were just the two other women praying so hard for me. But I did not know what to do because that was the pride. I'm sure that the prideful moment. And not that we have to banish pride. This is what the Christianity is teaching us to do. But we have to be really cognizant of what we say for Pete's sake. Because I said that and bam, they knew how to do it. Mm. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's so amazing that you found those people.
What happened to her could be the same thing. And plus, those two hands in the back on your leather jacket could also be probably a call for help, maybe for your attention, because you have the abilities, you have the ability to see, and they know who can see them.
Mm. Right.
I've been told that a lot from people, you know, that have the strong mediumship abilities, is that they almost have like a beacon or their aura gives off something that attracts spirits to them because they know that they can communicate with them and can hear them. So that's really, really interesting.
Absolutely. But I would have turned around and I say, yo, hands off me, hands off, don't touch me. And the special people get to touch me.
That's the right attitude to have too. I think some people who may get into paranormal investigation, whether it's, you know, an interest of theirs or a hobby, they don't realize that they really have to, you know, have a firm, strong voice. And I found too that I would have that really strong and firm and assertive voice in my dreams, as opposed to not having it so much in my waking hours. And now I realize that I have to also be that firm in my waking hours when I am investigating. It's important to use your voice. That throat chakra, let me tell you.
Oh, absolutely. Because a lot of the times with the deliverances that I do, I know that there's so many different approaches to that. And when people chase all of the evil spirits and dark energies out, what happens is that they just approach from different directions. And those energies, the evil spirits is what they call them, they can do anything they want. Anything they want. So I have learned long ago, just before I even approach the situation, if I am there to clean the place or people or their lives to go into that situation at all, I would just order them to be quiet, because they don't have the right to manifest. And this is our right to tell them, otherwise they're going to wreak havoc. And they don't have the right to do that unless we want it, unless we want it for the purposes of those shows, crazy shows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good point.
But if you want to take care of business, yeah, order them to be quiet.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. That really is.
Very good advice.
Now we have some events coming up here. So Kim and I are going to be speaking in Bridgewater on April 13th. It's Saturday night. For anyone in Bridgewater, Nova Scotia, we're going to talk about hauntings, apparitions, poltergeists, and demons. And then, of course, our big event is in the fall, the 2024 Halifax Paranormal Symposium. And Kim, you spoke at it last year. And like I said, you were a crowd favorite. A lot of people really hearing your perspective and your experience on the television show Haunted and all the investigations that you did. And so this year we have you back as the mistress of ceremony, so you can share some more of your experiences. What can you tell us about, the Paranormal Symposium and what you think it means to some of the people, you know, like the attendees and even some of the guest speakers getting up to be able to present, you know, the topics that they choose?
Yeah, well, you had touched on it earlier about, you know, kind of having this like safe space and this room full of people that aren't skeptical and just kind of creating a very nice community. It was really interesting for me because, well, obviously there are some really notable people there last year that were fellow speakers, but meeting the people and hearing their stories. So the people who were in the audience, and they would just kind of come up to me and they'd be like, "Hey Kim, what's your take on this?" And I was like, "You want my opinion? Oh my gosh, that's amazing." But it was really nice because there were even some young girls there that, you know, being a young female today and in any day has really never been easy. So being able to just kind of hear their thoughts and have their questions and even kind of reliving a little bit of their trauma, just to kind of be like, "Hey, am I okay?" Or, "Hey, am I crazy?" It was really amazing to just talk to them and be like, "No, you're not crazy. That's a fascinating experience. And you want my opinion? I'll give you my opinion. This is what I think." But
if I look at the validation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But just kind of like you said, creating this really nice safe space and having some really interesting conversations with like-minded people. It's great.
Yeah. I thought that was cool because you would see the audience go up to certain guest speakers and ask them certain questions, you know, like with Chris, it would be about Shag Harbor or his Shelburne UFO case, or just about UFOs in general. Obviously Dr. Richard Gallagher, it was demonology. You, it was, you know, paranormal investigations. It was really, really cool to see. And I think this year will be good too. We were touching on UFOs, mediumship, law enforcement and the paranormal, psychokinesis, and again, paranormal investigations from an equipment kind of side of things. So I think it'll be really interesting. And I told Dr. Yana that I'm going to bring her in next year. And I was going to have her speak on near-death experiences, but she's also very well versed in the Anunnaki. And I think that she can put together a very interesting presentation about the ancient beliefs in UFOs for next year. So,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I was there myself a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even from the perspective of archetypal psychology, it is so interesting. So, yeah, that would be fantastic. Yeah, there are many people who do research into the near-death experiences. And even if I had one and I consult people who come to me and normalize their experiences for them, nevertheless, I would love to talk about something else. Unless you persuade me and just make me talk about it. Which I could
well, we threatened like him with we threatened Kim with the Donaire this year, so I'm sure we can figure something.
But I love Donaire so much. That's a threat. I would gladly take it on.
I'm still trying to find a sponsor that will donate pizza and Donaires for us for the volunteers in kind.
Oh, yeah, you listening. Need to find that.
Oh, guys, yeah. I was going to ask you, what is Donaire? So what is
you
it?
Will find out, you will find out next year. It's almost like, do you guys have shawarmas out there in California?
Oh, Donaire. Ah, oh, I get it. Okay, this is how you read Donaire.
It's kind of like that, but it's way better. That's the only way to describe it.
Well, no, this is how you would pronounce it. That not Donaire, Donaire. But it's in the English, of course, it sounds differently. So fantastic.
Yeah, we'll expose you to them next year. We'll bring you. And do you like seafood at all?
Yeah, but I would eat donuts. Come on, Middle Eastern Turkish. I'm coming over.
We have really really good lobster, though. You might want to try the lobster.
We do. We'll get you on the lobster.
Because you donut. Catch it right there, right? It's all fresh, and Dr. Elliot is gonna dive to catch it fresh just for us.
I can't wait to see it.
I agree.
And it's going to be in November. You will be diving to catch it.
Oh my God. That's too funny.
Yeah, no, but I'm up for it.
Yeah, no, it's great. Hopefully, we see some people that attended last year. So far, I think the names, actually, because it's still early on, it's only March 27th. Now, because it's past midnight here, it's still March 26th for Yana. We're in the future over here on the East Coast. No, it's still, 7 months away. And I think the names that have come across that have bought tickets are new people this year. So, I mean, that's also really great. But it would be really cool if we could keep this kind of going. And I know even Chris Stiles said that he was quite impressed by it last year because it took the show many, many years before they could move it out of the Shag Harbor Community Center there and have it at the Rod Grand Hotel in Yarmouth. And, we went straight out of the gates and went very nice hotel. They just won an award, actually. I saw.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so very, nice, classy hotel. Did our first event there and we're successful. So, we're pretty, pretty happy about that. So hopefully we continue on and make this an annual event.
You're not putting people in haunted hotels? What's up with you?
No, it's
not. Put them all in haunted hotels. So last year,
what I wanted, and she's always my voice of reason. So last year, after the symposium, I was thinking it would be cool to do like a public ghost hunt. Like we could sell a couple more tickets to support the symposium and do like public ghost hunt. And she's like, Elliot, she's like, I don't know if you should do that. Like, that's a lot to do, like run a full conference in the day and then another public event kind of afterwards. I was so glad I didn't, because I was exhausted by the end of that day. Because you're, especially as the master ceremonies, like your mind is going. I have my little schedule, and even Spencer was making fun of me. He's like, you literally had like the times down and you were crossing things off. And I was like making sure that I kept things on point for the day. So I'm very glad that I didn't book that, because I do think it is a lot. And eventually I do want to get this to be up to 2 days and have 10 guest speakers come in over the weekend. But, don't want to put the cart before the horse.
You just need to find the right person to host the ghost hunt. And I happen to know a few people. I don't want to put myself out there, because like you said, I'm going to be really busy. But I'm actually going to the Pennhurst Paracon this year, which is one of the bigger ones. So I'm really interested to see how they make everything happen, because it's an all weekend event. They have ghost hunts. They have all these different tiers of pricing depending on what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I'll circle back and let you know.
Yeah, yeah, get that experience. It's awesome. When's that one?
In May.
Oh, that's in May. Nice. Yeah. Well, I'll be going to the Shag Harbor one because I haven't seen that one in a very, very long time, and it's always nice to go to these and see how different people put them on. You should probably look at even speaking at some, Dr. Yana, because I'm sure you have quite a few that happen in California.
Probably.
In California, have you seen, guys, the movie with Marilyn Monroe, Some Like It Hot?
I haven't seen it, no.
I have not seen it, no.
So it was filmed, in fact, in our famous Hotel del Coronado. And I remember checking into that the one time, and people were telling me at the front desk, they said that there is actually, this hotel is famous with a ghost of a woman. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, and it was an old hotel.
Yeah.
Built at the beginning of the 20th century. So there were all of these interesting pictures of supposed lady that is haunting this place on the walls. And you look at that, okay, like probably 1920s dresses. Not even 20s, probably in the 10s, I would say, 1910th, or even the end of the 19th century. And you looked at that, and everything looked nice and pretty. And then they said that, you know what, this is what it is, and don't be afraid if you see her. Like, okay. And I was so tired, I said, all right, I'm just going to go to sleep. So what happened there is just that this hotel is famous with that movie, Marilyn Monroe. That's why I mentioned it. But it has nothing to do with her ghost, of course. So there was a ghost and still is of a woman that shot herself there at the beginning of the 20th century because her lover did not join her. And for several days, she was waiting for him and he never showed up. So that was a story of a broken heart. And since then, she resides in that hotel, in that particular room. And so many people want to stay there in that room in order to experience that. And they do. However, that was not my intention. And at night, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was asleep, and all of a sudden I'm waking up. I'm so itchy, like I'm just wanting to take my skin off, and it was so bad. Yeah, and I look in the corner, and there's a woman standing.
Oh my God.
That was so crazy. And she said, "Give me your man."
What?
Is that what she said?
She said, "Give me your man." So I'm like, oh, pushing my husband, like, get up. And so, like, can you see her? It's like, no, I can't see anything. And I had such a horrible, I thought, allergic reaction. I said, I need some medicine. I didn't have it with me. So he went to get the medicine. And meanwhile, I was in the room with her. And I could see that what she was wearing, and she kept saying that, give me your man, because she was waiting evidently for her man to appear, and he never did. So she was stuck with that idea.
Wow.
Roaming That's around.
Crazy.
Yeah, roaming around and waiting for her man. So I guess like she was just going around shopping for any man that she can take.
My next two questions are, does the hotel have a conference room? And two, when are you booking a San Diego conference that I can come to?
You know, that's a great idea. I need to make it happen. Seriously, guys.
That is an awesome experience. Now, in hindsight, he's your ex-husband. Would you have given her your husband?
I, in fact, told her, you're welcome to. You know? I did. And the interesting thing is that she looked nothing like those wall pictures, because
really?
They also wanted to sensationalize her, because she was not the lady of the upper classes. And of course, the pictures on the walls were of a lady of the upper classes. And really? When I went down in the morning and I said, listen, what you have here is total BS. that woman that resides in this hotel, she did not look at all like that. She was wearing the long gray skirt, kind of a wool skirt, and then the very short jacket, really fitted of the blue collar. And then I looked it up on the internet. That's exactly what she looked like at the time when she died.
No way.
So, yeah, and not that many people know about it. So that's such a great idea, Elliot. I need to, in fact, go and sensationalize it.
Oh, totally. There. And we'll rent the room. But that'll be the after party room.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
And if anyone's got a man they're trying to get rid of, they get to sleep there.
Exactly. Ladies, bring your husbands, boyfriends.
That's crazy. Wow. That's a great story.
That's an amazing story. I love it.
Yeah. That's really cool. Well, hopefully you have some experiences on this upcoming trip, Kim, and maybe we can have you back on some point and you can tell us.
I would love that. Yeah.
And if you get anything really cool, I'll be watching your social media, see if you post it. But how can our viewers get in touch with you? Do you have a website that you prefer they go to, your Facebook page, or follow your I know you're on Instagram, TikTok?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Kim's Darker Side. Also, you can find me on YouTube, Kim's Darker Side. But yeah, if you just want to reach out or anything, all my contact information is on my website, which is Kim Moser, KIMMOSER .info.
Perfect. Awesome.
And so great. Interesting is that we see such a light, beautiful side of you. And if you want to find out the darker side, we can watch that.
That's where I talk about all things spooky.
As above, so below. Yes, exactly.
What was the last video you posted?
The Ouija board one?
The
what's your favorite haunted location one?
Okay. I think the last one I saw was the Ouija board one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was really interesting. So what is your take on the Ouija board?
Well,
time at the lectures. Demonology.
Yeah. I personally don't think the Ouija board itself is evil. I guess, it can bring forward some more evil things, but I don't think it's any more evil than any other paranormal device that you use to communicate with the dead, or even your own mind or your own third eye. That's certainly not evil. So I just kind of find it funny that everybody, chastises the Ouija board.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it too. I do think it's a tool. I think, it can be used to communicate. I only ever had the one story about it, and it was kind of a positive one. But we had one as a kid. I didn't know that my mother took it and allegedly had it blessed. And I don't even think allegedly. I think she actually did have it blessed. Yeah. We decided to use it one day because we couldn't find the television remote. And we had used it, myself and my siblings. And it kept saying UTS, which doesn't make any sense. So we're like, UTS. So we started thinking, well, maybe it's under the stairs, because we used to play underneath the stairs, a wine cooler. So we went in there and checked. It wasn't there. Then we thought maybe under the sofa. So we checked underneath the couch, underneath all the couch cushions. Then we actually thought underneath the sink, because there's a bathroom, sink down to the basement. So we went and checked there, and it wasn't there. And then the next day, my sister was playing at her toy kitchen, and underneath the sink of the toy kitchen, the TV remote was there, the UTS. So then that's the only time the board ever worked for us. It never ever worked at the end. That's the only experience I had with it. Now I do think the stories about people, pouring gasoline on it and burning it, and it shows up the next day in pristine condition on their kitchen table. I don't buy into those stories. I've never seen anything like that, in the 27 years that I've been doing this. But I do think, like you said, the danger lies in the communication part, because we're not sure who we're talking to.
Well, Dr. Elliot, you have the Ouija board, and I know that you do. You have it there, right under the couch, right under the bed. You keep it.
I do. I do have one, and he's underneath Joe, the haunted monkey.
Why don't you just burn it and see if that's going to come back?
I know. I've got a couple strange things in my office, which is, I've never had anything happen, though. I try and tempt fate, I guess. you know, I do it for research purposes.
Me too. There's been days where I'm like, I really should set up a camera on these shelves, because I have had some things. I've got some apparently haunted objects. I feel energy off of them for sure. But stuff's gone flying off the shelf for absolutely no reason. So
really?
Yeah. So I'm like, maybe I should just set up like a 24/7 camera and people can
watch. I did that after I got Joe. That was one of the things the previous owner had said, is that the doll moves on its own, especially on a full moon. So I did have the Nest camera set up on him for quite a while, but there was, and the nice thing about it was too, is it was motion activated, but there was nothing. And then Sarah, during COVID and all that, was working at home in my office full time. So she was with Joe for like 40 hours a week and never had anything happen. But we were just talking about this in the course that I'm teaching, Ghosts and Hauntings. Last week was about haunted objects, curses, and non-human apparitions. And we were talking about, you know, items being haunted, but not necessarily, you know, activated all the time. You know, for example, painting where the lady had painted it and she was going through a really rough time when she painted it. Right. And there has been studies done where artists paint their intentions into their artwork or their energies into the artwork. And so for her, it wouldn't stay on the wall, and it actually flew off the wall and hit her husband. And then since I've had it, I've never had any issues with it. So it's just, I don't know. For her, it didn't work out. They were experiencing strange things. For me, it's just a really cool painting to have in my office.
We need to have those prints. Yeah, we need to publicly sell them, right? For women who want to get rid of their husbands.
Yes.
Well, maybe we could use it on the poster for the San Diego Paranormal Conference you're going to plan for us.
Anyone who wants to get rid of their man, come on over.
You could sell extra tickets for that.
Right.
That's so funny.
But that is a great idea. That is a great idea. So I'm going to do that.
Yeah, look into it. I definitely come. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I've been dying to get to California. So
me too. I haven't been.
Good excuse.
Well, that is settled, guys. That is a fantastic idea, because it was in my mind for such a long time, probably for the past 5 years. So now that you've spoken about it, it brought it up. So I made a note, a huge note, with so many exclamation marks. So I'm going to do that.
You might have a bunch of East Coasters invading you out there.
Yeah. We made a pact, guys.
We'll show you a good time for sure. For sure.
For sure. Come on over.
Apparently, I say for sure a lot, Kim, and now I have Vienna saying it, and then she's been saying it to other people, and now they're saying it.
Southern California is now speaking this way. Yeah. For sure.
Oh my gosh, we need a revamp. Do you guys watch Saturday Night Live, and do you know the skit, The Californians?
I do watch Saturday Night Live, but I don't think I've seen the Californians.
It's an older one, and they talk like, you know, surfer kind of people. So when I see for sure come up on a new revamp of the Californians, Elliot, I'll know you've hit it big.
That is funny. We're going to find you a board, Dr. Elliot, and you're going to go surf.
Yes. For sure.
In front of Hotel Del.
I don't know how good I'll be, but I'll give it a try.
We'll teach you. We'll teach you.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is going to be so great. Well, guys, okay. Well, that is decided. I'm so excited. Kim, thank you so much for sharing your incredible experiences.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Yes, I learned things from you. And it was just really great. Thank you for allowing me to tell everybody my truths.
Yes. Yeah, and when you go on that trip in the United States, don't take anything from those American ghosts. You know, just tell them off. Hands off.
That's it.
Yeah, ask who it is and what they want. But there should not be any unwarranted touches. And if there are, they have to be gentle, for Pete's sake. So, we have to ask.
Good evidence. I can't wait. I can't wait.
For the evidence. Exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
Great.
So looks like next time we will have Dr. Oh my God. I'm so happy. I've been having too much fun tonight. Dr. Joseph Dillard. Dr. Joseph Dillard. I have to come back to reality, right?
Oh, I remember that conversation. It was,
yes,
it was
speaking about the dreams and dream sociometry. So that would be the first part. And the following Tuesday, he will do an interview on Dr. Elliot, and he will tell us his utmost secrets that he sees in his dreams. So we're going to get to see, to look into his soul. Yeah, so you don't want to miss it. Yeah. Come, everyone. Come and listen.
Yeah, you got to tune in for those, for sure.
For sure, and move to California, guys.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kim, and thank you everyone out there listening. This was Science and the Paranormal, and we were broadcasting live from the United Public Radio Network, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans, and also on Roku TV. We had Kim Moser tonight, excellent guest. And if you guys have any questions for us, email us at scienceandtheparanormal@ppri.net. Visit us at scienceandparanormalpodcast.com, which we'll have to change that soon. But yes.
Well, have a good night, everyone, and sweet dreams. And don't make us look into your dreams. It's for the next week.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.